Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the podcast that's not boring, it's not too interesting, it's just interesting enough. That really has been the intro that stood the test of time, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
When we can't think of something wittier, that's the go-to
that's the
one.
That's the go.
How are you both? Well, joining me today, I should introduce you first, is Robin.
Oh, thank you, Alex. I am well, thanks. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm not too bad, thank you. Just getting through life, really. Mm. Yeah, getting through this year. How about you, Martin?
Yeah, no, still churning on. Last week we spoke about the potential for vaccines coming in. So, fingers crossed, positive news. I think this week everyone's feeling a little bit better about the situation, maybe. Potentially.
Yeah. Except but here in the UK, right. We're in another lockdown. So it's all kind of...
We are, although haven't really... down equally. Doesn't really feel like I've exited the last one. So just... Carried on as usual, really.
For the three of us, it hasn't made a huge difference.
But like many of us during lockdown, I've been wasting my time playing some games, or so I thought.
Wasting?
Well, or so I thought. But according to a new study, video games might be good for your mental health. And that's the main topic that we're going to be discussing this week on the podcast.
I've got some strong things to say about that, sir.
Video games? Video games make killers.
Terrible
they make
things.
Killers.
I killed a prostitute in Grand Theft Auto, and then I did in real life. And I blame the game.
Oh dear, I think we're giving away our conclusion of this discussion ahead of time.
But before we jump into that, we did want to thank our sponsors of today's video. Oh, they're going to love that transition there.
They really are.
We'd like to thank our sponsors of today's video, which is NordVPN. And they've been kind enough to offer our listeners a special Black Friday deal where with every two-year purchase of a plan, you get 68% off. Plus, you get not one, not two, well, not even three, you get four additional months for free.
Wow.
Of the service. Which is just mad. This is an insane deal that you should go ahead and get right away.
That's crazy because already that 68% off means you're paying what, less than a cup of coffee every month. But with the extra 4 months, it's even less.
But Alex, what can I use NordVPN for?
Well, Martin, if you are like me and you enjoy a plethora of TV and film and other entertainment or news stories from around the world, then what if I told you, like that urban legend, you're only accessing 20% of your brain. You're only seeing the iceberg above the surface, Martin. Whereas with a VPN service, you can access the entire world's catalogue at the palm of your hand. It can be right there with you. You just need to connect to a different server in a different country, and then boom, you've got the US's catalogue of Netflix. You've got the Spanish version of Netflix if you want. NordVPN has thousands of servers in over 60 countries, so really, the possibilities are endless.
That is a lot of fun, actually. Choosing which country you're going to appear in on the VPN is quite fun. And it's really easy to use. You just go onto the browser and then just select your country. There you go.
It's true. What have you guys been watching recently? Because I've been watching The Fool. You heard of The Fool? F-A-L-L, about a family man who's also a serial killer. And I believe that is not available in the US for our US watchers.
That's a shame, because that was a really good show. That was Gillian Anderson, wasn't it? Of Gillian Anderson. X-Files and now The Crown.
Dark. Not for the faint-hearted, that one. It was brutal. But quite good. So if you are in the US and want to give that a go, check out NordVPN, connect up and watch it.
That's a great recommendation.
Very nice. Alex, very nice recommendation.
How do we get this deal, though?
Well, Robin, let me tell you. You have to go to nordvpn.com/justinteresting. That's JustInteresting. Or just look at the name of this podcast and go to nordvpn.com/justinteresting. Or at the checkout, use the code justinteresting to get this amazing 68% off a two-year plan plus... four additional months for free, and I haven't even told you the best bit. You're probably sat there thinking, well, I mean, that's a bit of a big commitment, 2 years. What if I don't like it? Well, there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. So even if you don't like the service, which, to be honest, it's a VPN, and it does the job, and it's, one of the best in the business, it's the one that we use, so you're not going to regret purchasing it. But even if you do, there's a 30-day risk-free money-back guarantee. So you may as well give it a go. And you'd be very much supporting the podcast if you did. And with that all said and done, let's jump into the podcast. So before we jump into the main topic, as always, I want to know what you've learned this week. Martin, what have you found out this week?
I learned a little bit about Joseph Stalin's son. Like, you hear a lot about Stalin, don't you, about the atrocities and the grandeur and stature of him, fairly short stature. But you don't really hear much about his family. And apparently, I didn't know this, but apparently he despised his son, his first son, a guy called Yakov Dushkashvili. I've butchered that name 100%, but I'm going to go with it. We're going to roll with it.
Well, if you're going to call him Yakov, you clearly do hate him, don't you?
Exactly.
I imagine he's a nice kid if he hates him.
Well, yeah, I think I think the feeling was fairly mutual, because when the Nazis invaded the Soviet Union in 1941, Yakov surrendered to the Germans voluntarily.
Oh.
And this was something that the Soviet Union, for propaganda reasons, said that they had captured him. But it seems like, from historical records, he actually surrendered because he had sympathies, basically, to the Nazis.
Oh, it doesn't sound that good.
He doesn't sound that good, does he? Yeah.
No.
And so he was held in a concentration camp for a few years, until 1943. He never actually escaped the concentration camp, because he committed suicide in the camp by electrifying himself on one of the fences around the perimeter of of the camp. Wow. And so there's that. And Stalin actually, the Germans basically thought that they would be able to use Stalin's son as a bargaining chip. But because he hated him, and really didn't like him, you know, it wasn't much of a bargaining chip. He basically said, you know, you can keep him. And, and so he was locked up in this camp until he ended up killing himself, which something is a story that I'd never heard of until this week.
I've never heard that either.
That's crazy. Yeah.
I know, it's pretty mad.
I want to feel sorry for him, but he voluntarily had Nazi sympathies, and I don't know enough about him, but I mean,
it's difficult to know whether he was a Nazi sympathiser specifically, or whether he just hated his dad that much.
it's hard to imagine any child of Stalin's turning out okay, and therefore it's hard to blame them entirely for their own views and what they did.
Yeah. Well, it seemed like he was anti-Semitic as well. Either way, it seems like he was a bit of a dick. But ended up topping himself in this in an unusual fashion. It reminds me of The Great Escape, you know, where who is it? The Scottish guy runs up and tries to jump up the fence.
Oh yeah, the mole.
Knowing that he'll get shot. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that's what I learned this week.
Interesting. Well, thank you for that, Martin. Robin, what? Anything to add to that?
Nothing so interesting, actually. Mine's going to seem like a little bit childish, but. I learned this week about complementary colours.
Ah, good.
And the contrast of complementary colours.
Red and green should never be seen unless there's a colour in between.
Oh my gosh.
Blue and black should always be whack, because they don't look good together. He says
exactly how
blue and grey.
That's pretty much what it is. Complementary colours are two colours that go together really well, but also contrast. So a practical application of complementary colours is, for example, blue and orange are complementary colours, which is why most lifeboat services have orange rafts or orange on the boats or orange life jackets, because it means that when against the blue of the sea, you'll see it really obviously, because it's kind of your eyes are attuned to that.
Yeah.
But what I actually learned about what the fact that I was going to bring to this thing today was just a little like party trick almost, although a party trick on yourself. If you stare at a single colour, so like take a piece of paper, all one colour, solid.
We're meant to be doing this now.
No, you don't have to do it now. Because in fact, if we do this now, it would be a really boring podcast, because if you look at it for about 30 seconds to a minute, and preferably a colour, not white. So look at a coloured wall or something, and then you look away to white, to a piece of white paper, you'll have an after image. And I think people have experienced this before. You know, you'll kind of see, like if it's a red circle and then you look away to a piece of white paper, you'll see a circle what they call an after image, even yes. though it's just a plain white surface. But here's the trick. It's not just that you're seeing the red circle. You'll see the circle in the complementary color of whatever okay. that color was. Oh. So, for example, if you're looking at a blue color, when you see a circle and looking at the white surface after a minute of staring at that blue circle, you'll see orange. And the reason Ooh. They do this is because, for whatever reason, the brain automatically fills in complementary colors with whatever it sees.
Wow. So this is like interesting.
Really useful for art theory. Really talented artists make use of this to kind of select their colors carefully.
They just stare at things for ages.
They just stare at things for ages, yeah. Just staring at a blank canvas, put a dot on it, and like... So yeah.
That's, interesting.
If I'm trying to choose a T-shirt that goes with my jeans... Yep. I should stare at my jeans and then look at a wall and then whatever colour I see, I should go with that.
You're yes. only allowed orange t-shirts.
Yeah. Or you could look at a colour wheel or take fashion advice, because this has been scientific.
I'm staring at my jeans and
looking
at the wall.
What do you guys think are the two best colours to go together? What combos are you into?
I love red and green and blue and red and green. Those three colours are my favourite colours.
Red and green. Alex just said red and green should never be seen.
Yep. I never wear them. But blue, red and green are my three favourite colours. But in terms of wearing, as you can see, people were watching podcasts.
Wait, your favourite colour? You can't have three favourite colours. And then
I can't have
red,
one favourite colour.
Those are the most, they're the heavy hitters of the colour world.
They're my favourites.
Red,
dark green and grey, I think, is quite a good one. I like that.
That's good.
Dark green and brown as well, like woodland.
Here's the thing:
trees, isn't it?
People, like anyone, trees. Anyone listening to this, if anyone listening to this podcast or watching it on YouTube has red hair, tell me. I'm curious. I see a lot of red-haired people, and they wear
blue skin.
No, they wear dark green coats or dark green shirts, and frankly, it looks great. It's a really good combination.
Yeah, I can understand
like
that.
Red hair and a dark green coat. So tell me, like, if you're a redhead person listening to this, is that a thing you do? Do you wear dark green colours because it goes with your hair? Or is that some kind of secret that redhead people know and the rest of us don't? I don't know. I'm curious. I see it a lot around in the UK, at least. It's a good look. It's a good look.
You're this close to asking for pics.
don't
do send
you me
do
pics.
This? Send me pics.
Please don't send me pics. No, that's not going on. Alex, what did you learn this week?
So I learned, well, by comparison, this is going to seem really boring, but actually there's an interesting fact embedded in here. But I learned a fact about copyright cartography.
Oh.
Yeah? Are you intrigued? Let's dig in.
Let's continue.
So it's basically the way that cartographers, obviously, the entire purpose is to make as accurate a map as possible.
Yeah.
But the problem is they put a lot of work into these maps. They go out, they do the research. You know, maps take years to make in many cases. And then once it's made, it's not like a piece of art where if someone copies it, then, you know, it's obvious that they've copied your artwork. Right. You can say, this is my artwork.
Yeah.
Ultimately, if it's accurate, then how could that be copyright protected? It's, you know,
I think I know where you're going here.
They can do the same thing. And it would just be like, we're just being accurate. Mm. So the way that map makers would get around this, have you heard this fact, Martin?
I think so. Mm. I think so. But carry on, because it's a great one.
Is that they would put in fake streets into their map. So that they could catch people out who copied their map.
It's so cool. That is so cool, isn't it?
They would put trap streets, deliberate mistakes That's added to cool. maps to catch unsuspecting copyright violators. And then there are some notable examples.
Oh yeah.
There's Moat Lane, which apparently once curved its way through North London, which obviously never existed.
Uh-huh.
And there's Oxygen Street. Which was supposedly ran between two houses in Edinburgh, which didn't. And there was one big case, just to show you how big of a deal this is and how this is you know, even an issue today, or like in the 21st century. In 2001, the UK's Automobile Association agreed to pay £20 million after it was caught copying ordnance survey maps. And this wasn't actually due to fake street names that the ordnance survey maps had included, but they had basically designed fingerprints in the maps, like that could they would be able to tell that it was their map. So like wow. the width of roads and yeah. So they wouldn't have entirely fake streets, but they'd have distinctive elements on the road that would indicate that it was them.
Interesting.
That had made it.
I mean, it is a bit dodgy, isn't it? Like, you're putting in fake roads.
Yeah,
going through a house. Yeah. It's like when you hear these people who use their sat nav and end up driving into a river.
I was literally about to say, does that apply to sat navs? Because it might explain a lot.
Are people walking into walls and stuff?
Yeah,
yeah.
But also, interestingly, dictionaries do this as well. Recent editions of the New Oxford American Dictionary included the word esquivalence, which is defined in the dictionary as the willful avoidance of one's own official responsibilities, which was later shown to be entirely made up. So it made me think, how many people have played a game of Scrabble and said, no, it is a word. And then they looked it up.
That's even more dangerous than the map thing.
Exactly.
Because at least with the map thing, you get there and you're like, oh, this street isn't here. Maybe it got demolished or something, I don't know, or built over. But a word that doesn't exist.
Misinformation is.
Yeah.
Misinformation. That's what
that is. New Oxford American Dictionary is fake news, let's be honest.
Scum.
Yeah, it's a dictionary with scum. American in the title, so it's not real anyway. Yeah.
Not enough vowels.
But yeah, that was what I learned this week.
That is a great fact.
Very good. Very good, Alex. Very good.
Well, thank you for sharing with me what you learned this week, fellas. It's, as always, just immensely fascinating learning what you've been Googling this week. Before we move on to our main topic, shall we look at some of the...
I thought that was an unhanded compliment there.
I thought it was... I know what I said.
I know you know what you said.
Before we jump into the main topic, shall we look at some of the YouTube comments this week?
Oh, yeah.
I've got an interesting comment. This is based on what we spoke about last week. I can't remember who brought this up. Was this you, Martin? About aphantasia?
Yes, yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah. So this was people who can't actually imagine things, like in a visual way in their head. And it was fascinating reading the comments. Some of you actually said that you had this. And one of these commenters, Jay and I, kind of described this. And they said, thank you for talking about aphantasia. I have this. If I try to imagine an apple, for example, I know what an apple looks like, but I just can't see it. I can't see anything when I imagine, just black. But it does not affect dreams as I can see in them. As for reliving things, you can still remember all those things. You just can't really see them. I don't think it makes that big of a difference. I also can't really enjoy books because I can't go into another world when I read things, as some people describe it. And then they say, you know, I'm actually a bit jealous of people who can visualize things. I mean, really, you can just close your eyes and actually see anything you'd like. If you could do that, why not just close your eyes and go on some amazing adventures?
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, it's really fascinating. Thank you so much, Jay and I, for your comment, because I think that answered a lot of the questions we had from this last week.
Like
reliving memories, what that kind of experience was like. Whether it affects your dreams as well. I guess it's one of those things, if you've never experienced it, we can't say whether it's better or worse than our own way of doing things, our way of experiencing things.
And with the stats that came up with that one, it was between 1% and 3% estimated who have this condition, who cannot visualize things, which is a high percentage. So I was expecting there to be some comments, but the level of the replies and the detail of the replies that we got from that was really great and really interesting as well, to hear what you guys think of it, what you see. It was really fascinating.
Yeah. I've brought up Jay and I, but there was also Lysandris as well, who I just wanted to mention as well, because they gave an amazing comment as well that you should read if you're interested in this topic.
So the comments I want to bring up are in relation to the question that we asked, where do you listen to the podcast? What are you doing when you listen to the podcast? And this one is from Thomas T. 8606. And Thomas T. says, I usually listen to your podcast while I'm making food and with no pants. Is that weird? And then no context, no, it just suddenly jumps to we in Sweden give Santa milk and porridge.
Oh well,
okay, which was another question.
Question.
So yeah. I love the fact that those two kind of came together. I mean, no pants. I mean, in the UK, no pants means no underpants, which would be a bit weird.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you mean pants as in trousers, which is kind of less weird, I guess.
Well, so I mean, I never make dinner with pants. I use food. It's usually better.
Very good.
Oh, very good. I'm interested, what kind of food is he making? Because if it's anything that's going to spatter, then...
Yeah.
I don't know. You've got to be careful. I don't know about that. You've got to be a bit careful, yeah.
Is he frying sausages? That's just a recipe for disaster there.
You're giving us an image there, Robin.
I'm just imagining right now, listening to us describing him frying sausages, he is also frying sausages right now.
That would be perfect, wouldn't it? Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
A conception.
I mean, might be a bit burnt by now, considering we've been going for a little while. But along similar lines, Grant Middleton says that whilst listening to you, I make prosthetic legs.
Oh.
I'm a prosthetic technician in Oxfordshire.
Oh, wow.
What a fascinating job to have. That's amazing.
That's so fascinating, yeah.
The range of things that people are doing. I mean, I guess you can be doing anything, can't you, when you listen to it, really? But
yeah.
I'd also expect it to be kind of, when I'm bored or when I'm commuting or whatever.
Yeah.
It's quite a range, which is fantastic.
Yeah, there are quite a few comments along that line answering what you did. Please keep them coming in. It's fascinating to learn.
Yeah. Love reading it.
Yeah, my comment was also a response to a question that we asked in last week's podcast, which was about the COVID vaccine. And it was a question that Martin brought up, but it's also relevant to what we're discussing today, because it's about the game Detroit Becoming Human.
Oh, yeah, Detroit Becoming Human.
And Joseph Stolzberg said, Detroit is a fantastic game. I loved how I was playing the game at the same time as some of my friends, and none of us had the same experience. In particular, I remember burning down the house of a very unpleasant gentleman while trying to escape, and my friends saying, "You could do that?" Sadly, I've never found any options for castration, but I suppose they had to save something for the sequel. So, I mean, I haven't played the game yet, so spoilers that there's no castration in the game, Joseph. But thank you for sharing that experience.
I feel like the commenters are catching on now that if they put castration in the comment, it's more likely to be read out in the podcast by you.
No. This is true.
And then there's another one, actually, another video game comment. Well, not a video game, sorry, but I just want to quickly say Captain Wesker 12, named after the Resident Evil characters, says, yes, we need Alex reviews on Fast and Furious.
So, in some form or another, that will happen, won't it? At some point, you will be discussing the Fast and Furious franchise, I imagine.
100%.
I mean, I probably won't subject everyone on the channel to that.
Well, I think some of our Patreon supporters and YouTube members might benefit from Alex's views on the Fast and Furious franchise, because they've been so generous and so supportive all this year that we've managed to break a goal. Break a goal? Is that a phrase? That's not a phrase, is it? We've reached a goal. Thank you very much. On our Patreon, which is to create more content for our Patreon and YouTube members. So thank you. Massively thank you to all of you for supporting us and helping us reach that goal. It's amazing. And we think the extra piece of content that we'll be making every week might be something that would involve Alex sharing his views on the Fast and Furious franchise.
Not every week. Just
every week, Alex will talk about Fast and Furious. Alex's Fast and Furious video blog. This week, I watched Fast and Furious. Week 2, I watched Fast and Furious again. Week 3, I watched Fast and Furious. And week 4,
just because I do that every single week doesn't mean I'm going to make a video about it every week. No, but it's true, though. Thank you so much, everyone, for all of your support. We have reached our first goal on Patreon, which is to make an extra bit of content for you, our lovely Patreon supporters, every week. And we will be doing that in some form or another starting next week.
Yes, we have one particular idea in mind for our second strand, but we want to keep it kind of flexible as well. So it'll be a little more interesting, and another strand coming to patrons exclusively. So if you want to get involved in that, do head on over to patreon.com/justinteresting and you can have a look at what's on offer there.
Yeah, or join us on YouTube.
Or join us on YouTube.
Yeah.
And with that, Shall we jump into our main topic of the week, which is talking about video games, funnily enough, something that we love doing, and discussing whether they're good for your mental health. And this is based on a new article, a new bit of research that's come out this week from an Oxford University study. So the summary of this piece of research from the Oxford Internet Institute was that people who play video games for long periods of time tend to report feeling happier than those who do not, which is interesting in and of itself. Do you generally find that when you're playing video games? Do you feel happier generally as a person after a big long session of after playing a game all day when you know you should have been doing work?
That's a big question.
I mean, that's very, very specific. But what I would say is that, firstly, disclosure here, I love playing video games. I really, really enjoy it. To say, do I feel happy after playing a frustrating online multiplayer game, probably a tense first-person shooter,
yeah.
I don't necessarily feel happy. Happy isn't the right word. I might feel content if I played well. I might feel like I've had fun. Happy? I'm not so sure. My point is, it entirely depends for me on the game that I'm playing and the experience that I've had. Saying video games make me happy is quite a big thing. I mean, what I would say is I go back to them. if that's a sign that I enjoy them and that they make me happy, then yes, I return to video games again and again.
Heroin addicts always go back.
I was going to say,
if you ask a heroin addict, does heroin make you happy? It would be in the moment it makes me happy. Longer term, the negative effects of it. Do they degrade my satisfaction with the whole of my life? You're asking a different question there. So you're looking at timescales, you're looking at the individual games that you're playing. There's so many variables to this, surely. I mean, these guys have done research, I think, on Animal Crossing and Plants vs. Zombies, which, from what I've heard, I've played a little bit of Plants vs. Zombies, never played Animal Crossing. They're quite happy style games, aren't they? They're family friendly. I imagine people have got incredibly frustrated at both these games at times, but in general they're kind of
I think they
look happy.
Well, I mean, yeah, with Animal Crossing at least, the last thing you could say about that is that it was stress inducing. I mean, we did a little video where we played, all three of us played Apex Legends on the channel.
Yeah.
And I think me and Robin, for a lot of that time, were cowering in a room somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
For about 10 minutes.
There was a point where Marston had to leave the game and we were just hiding until he returned.
I wouldn't have described myself as happy in that situation. No. I was in a bunker. I was hiding, dreading what was going to happen next.
Although, do you think that this research, it's a departure, isn't it, from previous research, which has definitely said, well, the status quo has said video games make children unhappy, or children. They tend to focus on children. They do, and that's probably a first flaw, isn't it? The fact that, they assume that video games are for children. That they make people unhappy, that they can cause issues with mental health, even that they've influenced people that have gone on to commit serious crimes. And this is basically saying the opposite of that, isn't it? It's saying that, okay, it's not dismissing that those things, could potentially take place, but it's definitely showing the other side of the coin.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you bring up, who it was aimed at as well, because this study was completely aimed at adults, people over the age of 18, and it involved 3,274 gamers, and it was a survey, basically, which... players answered questions about their well-being, and they also then cross-referenced this survey with information that the developers of these games shared about the users and how long each participant had played the game for, which is quite unusual. I hadn't heard of game developers doing that kind of thing before, participating in these sort of research studies. So there's interesting questions that come up with that. It was anonymous data that they shared,
right.
But then of how long each participant played the game in. So I don't know how it was anonymous if they knew the participants involved.
Well, you can say you don't have to release the identity of your participant to the researchers.
Yeah, I guess.
You can say this participant played X number of hours. There's ways of doing that. It's patient A did this, patient B did this. I think
true.
I agree, I mean, the game company definitely has that data, and it's not anonymous.
Of course, otherwise they wouldn't be able to link it, would they?
Yeah.
It's interesting, though. But, I mean, what do you think about that just on its own? Like, the fact that these video games companies taking part in this research, does it, could it indicate that they almost knew what the results would be? Would they have wanted to take part in this if it was going to come out the other way and say that video games are terrible for your mental health?
I have two thoughts here. First thought is this is a great opportunity for the video game industry as a whole to start to fight this stigma of them being bad, because culturally, particularly in the West, there's this stigma of video games influencing violent behaviors and being bad for your mental development. And this is a great way for them, to participate with scientists, and in a similar way to other industries having funded research, they can change the public perception through funding that research or through participating with that research. The second thing that you just prompted me to think of is, this is Polybius, right? This is 1980s data gathering, secret government experiment. I assume all those people whose data was shared with the researchers deliberately, but not necessarily wittingly, agreed to the terms and conditions that said they could share their data with a third party anonymously. It could be that they had to explicitly say, yes, I want to be part of this study, but I suspect it was just part of the T's and C's when they downloaded the game. This is exactly the Polybius conspiracy and what that's all about. So it's real. It's real, people. You just spell Polybius, Animal Crossing. That's really different.
The actual Polybius game turns out to be Animal Crossing in the end. Yeah. Some far less sinister looking, anyway. There is a sinister, dark undertone to Animal Crossing, though, isn't there?
I imagine you can find one if you want to.
Yeah.
Tends to be the way. I mean, it was something that came to mind when you were talking about whether the industry would be interested in this research. I imagine that the researchers who went to them and requested this data had a hypothesis in mind and an expectation in mind of what the results would show based on previous studies. Mm. And that was probably that, contrary to common belief, certain video games, maybe they chose these ones in particular to I don't know, not to prove a point, but to show what they were, trying to prove, do help with mental health issues, or make people happy. There's a difference there, I think. But.
Well, it's interesting, actually. So the lead scientist on this study, Professor Andrew Prispolsky, said that he was surprised by the results that they got. And he said, quote, "If you play Animal Crossing for 4 hours a day, every single day, you're likely to say you feel significantly happier than someone who doesn't."
Mm. I mean, that doesn't,
and he said that doesn't mean Animal Crossing by itself makes you happy, but he added that this contradicts 40 years of previous research, which had suggested the longer people played games, the more unhappy they said they were. So this is entirely contradictory. Maybe it's the games that they're playing. These are, like you said earlier, these are two very particular games. If you played Call of Duty for 4 hours every single day, would you mark yourself as happier in your life than just playing Animal Crossing?
I think it's an interesting time as well, isn't it? We're talking about the pandemic as well.
Yeah.
It was widely known that a lot of people bought this game, and actually Nintendo Switches, where this game can be played, Animal Crossing, almost as a bit of an antidote for boredom and for the horrors of the outside world, especially during the first part of the lockdown and the pandemic.
You're looking so at me. Like, yeah, I am a statistic in that.
Oh, there we go. So you've got to be thinking, okay, are people happier than they would have been otherwise because they're no longer bored and because there isn't an alternative? Whereas maybe if there was the alternative of being able to go out and socialise with friends or whatever, this has replaced that. You can socialise in the game. You can have that escapism. So maybe they're happier within the parameters of this study.
That's a really great point, yeah.
That is a really good point. But at the same time, aren't you just kind of applying the general reasons that gamers love video gaming? Gamers who play for a very long time are the kind of gamers who play online, and they often use that as a social occasion.
Yeah.
I think also, to go back to what Alex said about this fella, professor, commenting that this study disproved 40 years of studies that suggested that playing games for a very long time was bad for your health. Well, it made you feel unhappy. Those studies are probably the kind of studies that were looked at in a study of studies back in 2017, where they looked at all the hundreds of video game studies that happened over the previous decades, and they kind of looked at them all and said, what can we find out by looking at the results of all these different studies? And they were looking at addictive behavior. So we've already mentioned this podcast, dopamine, that's the key chemical that's released from playing things like video games. That's the kind of thing that drugs also affect, and the kind of thing that leads to addiction. And people who are addicted to video games have something called internet gaming disorder. And I think it's important that internet is in that phrase. It suggests that they're online playing against other people and they're socializing. But I think also maybe what he's found, and this is pure speculation on my part, is maybe what he's found is that this study is looking at people who aren't playing with an addiction. They're just playing for long periods of time, but they haven't been identified as having internet gaming disorder. Because, of course, internet gaming disorder is a recognized condition now. And there's a study from 2017, a separate one, a psychological study, that said symptoms of this disorder include depression, anxiety, obsessive compulsive behavior, and is associated with a wide range of detrimental health-related outcomes, particularly in regards to mental health. So I wonder if all that's happened here is that a study into people who play for long periods of time has finally not looked at people who have a gaming addiction and looked at people who just play games.
Yeah, that's true. So you're focusing on people who are addicted to video games. I mean, it comes back as well to these games in particular, I guess. Animal Crossing and Plants vs. Zombies are not what you'd consider hardcore gamers go in for. They're very casual games, aren't they? You can just pick them up and play and then put them down again. So that's a very good point. Maybe previous studies have focused on that kind of negative aspect of video games rather than just whether people are happier after playing them.
Yeah. Although video game studies have also looked at the physiological effects of video gaming. Again, as of 2017, because that's the latest data I've got in front of me, it says that in America, 3/4 of gamers, which is people who play for 3 hours or more per week, are aged over 18, which is interesting. But also that by studying these gamers, they found that the brain can physically change. And video game use is known to improve attention, particularly over long-term attention, which is weird. You'd think it would lead to shorter attention spans because you're playing short bursts of games, particularly multiplayer online stuff tends to be 10 to 15 minutes. But apparently it improves your long-term attention span and improves your ability, what they call selective attention, which I guess is your ability to say, right, I'm focusing on this thing right now. And it says that the regions of the brain that play a role in attention are more efficient in gamers compared to non-gamers, and they require less activation to stay focused on demanding tasks. Playing video games extensively increases the size and the competence of parts of the brain that are responsible for visuospatial skills, which makes sense. You're constantly existing in this 3D space with nothing but visual cues and oral cues around you. And particularly the right hippocampus in the brain was enlarged in long-term video gamers, which is kind of weird, but good for them. I have a question now with these kind of studies. When they say gamers, is there a blurred line now? Because I just quoted that 2017 qualification, which was a gamer is somebody who plays for 3 hours or more per week. And admittedly, sometimes I wish I could achieve that. But I think there are some weeks where I very easily achieve that.
That's very true, actually. And yeah, I mean, what's the difference really between someone who's going to play you know, like a proper like PlayStation, get a PlayStation 5 and play the new Demon Souls, mm-hmm. compared to someone who's just playing a little like mini game on their phone? Are they classed as a gamer? You know, like yeah. during their, if they're just playing that on their commute.
And this study would suggest that they can be and should be considered gamers. Yeah,
but that's totally different. They're totally engaging with content in a different way for different reasons, I would say.
I think that's why you can't look at this study and come to the conclusion that video games, you know, make people happy. Likewise, you can't go back to the old studies and say that video games cause addiction, because, you know, so different games affect people in different ways. And as you say, there's such a variety, the definition of a gamer is so varied now, it's so encompassing, that I don't think you can look at either of these studies and make conclusions. What you can say is that people playing this particular game, they're from this particular demographic, they were happier based on this study.
Yeah.
I'll be so intrigued to look at a study based on, say, a first-person shooter, based on a frustrating game like Bloodborne or Demon's Souls, which Bloodborne's probably my favourite game of all time. I love it. But does it make me happy?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Beating a boss probably does.
Beating a boss, yeah. There's nothing like it in gaming. But, happiness happiness is a vague word.
It is.
Well, I mean, this is what the professor has called for now. He said that he's called on other game makers to share similar data that Nintendo and the makers of Plants vs. Zombies to share similar data. We need to study more games and more players over more time. It would be like letting psychologists study all the playgrounds in the world. We might build a theory of bullying or learn how people build new friendships. My hope is that this fosters curiosity and collaboration and open data.
It's a good start as well. I think if he, like you say, if he's contradicting 40 years worth of data as well, that's almost like the kickstart that's needed for other people to then pick up the mantle as well. Because if it was literally backing up all the other data, video games doesn't make people happy, then you'd just be like, oh right, okay, well, there's not really, there wouldn't be much point in continuing these new studies. So hopefully it will lead to more and more. We'll learn more in the near future.
I mean, just to round this off for me personally, after what Martin just said about Bloodborne, was it? I, just last week, after a couple of very hard weeks, to be frank, at work, and I hadn't played anything for a while, I suddenly, for whatever reason, got inspired to fire up a game that I haven't played for over a year. And I fired it up, and I literally played it for half an hour because there was a timer that said how long the match had lasted, and it was I just played it on my own single player. And after that, that half hour, I felt relaxed. I didn't necessarily feel joyful, but I felt really calm. And it was the middle of the night. I just couldn't sleep. I thought, all right, I'm going to put this thing on. It's been ages since I played it. And I played
it. What was it?
It was Star Trek Bridge Crew.
Yeah.
And I played it on my own. I didn't even play it multiplayer, even though it's designed for multiplayer. I just played it on my own with AI. And I just really, I felt really good, really calm after it. And I don't play video games as much as I would like. I also definitely don't play board games as much as I like. And I think part of the problem is that I try to do both and I don't have time to equally commit to either video games or board games. And in fact, a friend of mine and I have a YouTube channel, going to plug it shamelessly here, Creaking Shelves.
How have you not plugged YouTube. That up until now? This is like the 39th podcast.
Yeah, if you're interested in board games, we do kind of board game reviews on a channel called Creaking Shelves on YouTube. Anyway, so we love board games. And I have to admit, like, even when I've played a frustrating board game, and there are several, that are really hard, or board games that you just cannot win, or board games that overstay their welcome and last 4 hours when they really should have been two, I nonetheless have a great sense of joy when I have played a board game. And when I had a board game day and had friends around and we've done 6-7 hours of playing board games and we've played two board games or maybe even four board games in that time, I always feel great, like really great at the end of that day. Mm. Because I think it's the combination of the social side of things and the puzzle solving and then the endorphin release of, you know, just playing a game. And even if, like Martin said with Bloodborne, you know, the experience sometimes can be very tense in the moment. But at the end of it, when the winner has been decided and you're able to look back and analyze your behavior, you're thinking, okay, I know what I'd do next time. And you're like, yeah, I'm going to go back to this.
Yeah.
Even if the game is bad, technically, or a game that's less satisfying than other games I've played in the past, there's always that sense of, yeah, I got an experience out of that. I never feel like I've wasted time.
I think like the good feelings, like you say, can be linked to like the social aspect. I think that's a big part of it, to be honest. I think if I play games for like 4 hours with some friends of mine on like an online game, I don't really feel like I've wasted those 4 hours, even if the game is terrible, because I've essentially just been hanging out with some friends. I'd do that anyway.
Yeah.
But also there's the overcoming a challenge aspect. And it's interesting that we focused on there's like Dark Souls games and that. And then maybe, the relaxation element of just escapism, escaping to a different sort of world.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what this Animal Crossing experience offers in that sense. So I think maybe a combination of those three elements could be part of what causes people to feel this way.
Yeah, I think you nicely rounded off, Alex. Yeah.
Alex, do you want to do a study into video games, Alex?
I would bloody love to do a study into video games. I volunteer as tribute. So I think, let's summarize and say that we can't necessarily, based on this study, recommend that you go and binge and play a game all day and it will make you super happy.
Yeah.
But there's definitely more research into it, and this is an interesting study either way. I think we can say that. And if you are going to play a game for around 4 hours, let it be Animal Crossing, because you might be more likely to feel happy after that, at least.
Also, get NordVPN.
And NordVPN. NordVPN. Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I would say let's do a quiz, but it's not actually me doing the quiz this week, which is a bit weird, a bit topsy-turvy, isn't it?
No, it will be me as the quiz master.
Again.
It'll be me again, just because of the way things have panned out over the last few weeks means that it's my turn again. So
I've done less quizzes, haven't I?
You have done indeed.
Yeah. Martin has very kindly volunteered to be the quizmaster for this week, and I believe next week, so that Alex and I can get the same number of matches as Martin has this season, because he really wants to rub salt into that wound when he wins.
No, there's still a lot of time. Still a lot of time. As always, it's 10 questions with a bonus question. If we're tied, general knowledge. I sound like Trump then. General knowledge.
General knowledge.
And then just pause it.
What's that?
Not really knowing what we're going to say next. General knowledge. 10 questions. Really good. Okay. Question numero uno. Actually,
Haven't done our buzzers yet.
Oh, come on. Okay, you've gone for aha, the French champagne. And Robin's gone for the Wilhelm scream. There we go.
That's okay. Not true. That's I've actually got a different buzzer.
You're half right. Really? Okay. My buzzer is this. That is correct.
Okay, 50%. Okay, Alex, quickly change your buzzer.
I've gone for Michael Barrymore's I'll See You When You Get There. See you when you get there. We've been around to places, found interesting faces. Interesting faces. Old, no one left out in the cold. Take a long look around in places of renown. No one would wear a frown. And everybody got on down.
So bad.
You've got to stop them.
I'll stop.
Oh my goodness. So for the very least, so we don't get copyright claimed by Barrymore. Yeah. He's saying he's a bit of a dick, so he probably would.
Let's hope it's not a listener.
Fantastic video, though.
Yeah, great performance. Let's not be.
Yeah, it's a fantastic Partridge impression.
It does sound a lot like Alan Partridge. Okay, you ready? Question.
I was born ready.
I am
losing.
Question number one: the PS5 launched in the UK this week and the US last week, but when did the original PlayStation first launch?
Oh.
Yes, Robin.
1994.
Okay. Alex, any advance on 94?
That we meet. 1995.
It was December 3rd, 1994. Well done, Robin.
Yeah. Thank you.
So he was. So Robin was right.
Yeah, no, he was right. He was right. But if you said 94 as well, then you know,
we would have had to go down to the month and the day. And
exactly.
I would have been stumped.
There we go. Question number 2-1 to Robin. Yeah. What type of animal is the longest living mammal on Earth?
Mammal.
A song and a dance, we gave everyone a chance. Oh,
yeah, we gave everyone a chance. Longest living mammal. Oh, wait, hang on.
What?
I'm such an idiot. I thought you meant like the longest mammal. Longest living as a
human. Longest living. Longest
so,
living,
Alex,
longest
what is the longest mammal? Please tell us.
It's
probably the same answer.
I'll have a guess anyway. Is it humans?
No, it's not humans. Oh. No. Good guess, Rabler. Yes, it's Robin.
Whale.
That would do. That would do. Specifically, it's a bowhead whale. Yes. They can live for up to 200 years.
Wow. I should have just said whale. That was literally the original guess.
It would have been the longest mammal. Yeah.
It would have been the longest mammal, yeah.
It would have got you the point. God.
That's amazing.
2-0 to Robin.
Imagine living 200 years.
200 years.
Yeah.
200 years.
All those interesting facts. How many podcasts would we be on when we're 200?
At least 200.
10,000.
Somewhere in between.
It would be 10,000, wouldn't it? 200 times. Yeah. Question number 3. It's going to be a weird sense of my mortality then.
Sorry, Martin.
Question number 3. There are 4 US states that begin with the letter W. What are these? 1 point for all four.
Take a long look around in places of renown. No one would wear
a frown. But be careful, Alex, because if you say them and get them wrong, okay, then you're giving them away.
Okay.
He's going to get them.
Washington.
Okay.
Wisconsin.
Okay.
Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
And West Virginia.
Correct. Well done. 1 point.
Nailed it. Look at
Very
that.
Very good. Very good. 2-1.
That is great.
Well earned that point, if I may say so. Yeah, I couldn't tell you 4 good English counties, but...
yeah, it's weird that, isn't it? Yeah.
Question 4. In Greek mythology, who was or who is the goddess of the hunt?
A frown. And everybody got on down, sang a song or played a...
Is it... Is it Artemis?
It's Artemis.
Yes. Heck. Wow.
Very good. Very good. That was very good. Quick as well.
Yeah, straight in there.
Question.
I know my huntresses.
You know your huntresses. Oh, fair enough.
Okay. Fair enough.
Specific knowledge. Question 5. Which sport am I talking about if I use the terms airball, fadeaway, and double dribble? A frown.
Basketball.
Basketball. It's bomb.
That was a buzzer.
That's a 3-pointer there.
Actually was, wasn't it?
You only get 1 point, but it was, yeah.
You're on 3-2.
Now you've got 3 points.
He's gonna steal it now. He's got
three,
it.
Three, two. I mean, if you win, it's not
way
stealing.
Too soon to say that, Robin.
Totally. It's a 1 point behind.
Also, you've got
also, it's a little bit disingenuous to use the word steal if he's just getting points for getting the questions right.
Okay, steal was
well justified as well.
Inaccurate, but yes.
Question 6: how many letters are there in the standard Italian alphabet?
And everybody got on down, sang a song, or played along.
Oh, song. Yes, Alex.
26.
Okay. We're going to hold you closest wins. Robin, any advance on 26?
21.
It's 21.
What?
Nailed it.
Missing, I suppose, I didn't know this, by the way, I just found out this fact.
Yeah.
Apparently missing are J, K, W, X, and Y. They're not pronounced.
Mm. Oh, yes, I've discovered this week, actually, that Italian only has the letter J in loan words from English.
There we go. Because
yeah.
I was thinking of Spanish, and of course they have lots of J's, don't they? But Italian, I've never studied Italian, so I didn't know this. No. But there we go.
Yeah.
There we go. 21 letters. Dot, dot, dot.
Oh, Robin, you're going to steal this.
Yeah.
Steals. Thief. Yeah. Thief. 3 all was close. 7. What was the deadliest battle of World War II?
Two.
The people that we meet came right up off the street.
Yes,
the
Alex.
Song and a dance we gave everyone a chair.
Oh, I don't know. Stalingrad.
It's Stalingrad.
Yeah, that's
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
1.8 million casualties.
Wow, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
bloody.
Horrible.
Stalingrad, yeah. Stalingrad. Movies with Stalingrad. Enemy at the Gates has a Stalingrad scene,
yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Any others? I think
there's pretty sure there's a movie called Stalingrad.
Oh, there was, wasn't there, actually? Yeah, no, you're right. There we go. 4-3. Question number 8. How many days are there in 3 leap years?
What?
How many days are there in 3 leap years?
Oh.
Yes, Robin.
I'm confused. But I think it's 360. Hey, I've buzzed, Alex.
Sorry.
Thank you very much.
You've got 5 seconds.
366 times 3, which is 900. 1,894.
Incorrect.
Damn it.
What was your guess?
Okay. 1,098.
Yes. Yes, Alex.
I'm going to guess...
5, 4, 3, 2...
1,093.
Incorrect.
Oh,
Robin?
What?
Any advance?
1,098.
Thank
you.
Oh. Well done, very good. Very
Thank
good.
You, Martin. That was very generous of you to give me that chance.
I got it wrong. Yeah,
I wanted to be kind of time sensitive on the mathsy ones.
So that was, I mean, yeah, frankly, as demonstrated, need a bit more time with the maths. But thank you.
4-all, blimey! You're getting these questions right, and you're both getting them right. 4-all, question number 9. What is the national flower of the Netherlands? Yes, Alex.
Yes, Alex.
Is it the tulip?
It's the tulip.
Oh, these questions.
Famously the tulip. Robin, was that you got an issue with the questions?
No, no, questions, no, these questions are good. I just stated how we both know the answers.
Oh, right,
this
yeah.
This isn't
yeah.
a decisive quiz like we often have.
I see, yeah.
It's tense.
Yeah,
it's tense.
Staying tense. Close.
But Alex has got it 5-4.
Can we just like up the ante here for a second? Because what are we on currently? Because I think for Robin if I win this quiz, the best I can do is come second, join Ooh. Second with you, Robin.
Mm.
But you need this quiz to beat Martin,
if
don't you?
If Alex wins this, then Martin has won the season. Yeah, that's the way
I think.
Ooh,
so,
okay.
Yeah. I'm not playing this for me. I'm playing this for everybody who hates
Martin.
And I'm
playing this to stop Robin from winning this season as
but
well.
But I can't win the season. The best I can do is tie with Martin.
Well, it'd be tied. It'd be joint first, wouldn't it?
Well, we'd have to do like some kind of deciding grudge match then.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I didn't do well when we lost to that.
Well, I don't care about winning. I think I'm very pleased for Martin to win. But I'm just saying, if Alex wins this, then guaranteed.
Yeah,
next
you
week's
have to
quiz
care about winning, Robin. Like, otherwise, there's no competition here.
Okay, I'm just saying. Well, our audience might not enjoy next week's quiz because you know it'll just be Alex and me, but Martin will have won. So, you know.
I'll just bask in the glory, wear my crown.
We'll be fighting for second place, though. So
that's true. That's true.
That's true. That's true. Anyway, it will all be. It might be very material if you can get this one right.
Well, I just wanted to raise the stakes, though, before
yeah,
we
like
get
it.
To this.
I like
on.
It. Yeah,
put the pressure on.
That's the ante. Yeah. Question 10. In The Simpsons, is Itchy the mouse or the cat?
That's a good question.
Yes, Alex.
Itchy is the mouse.
I win!
Yay!
No, sorry, Alex. Alex, you win. Well done. You've won the quiz.
Yes!
Well
that
done.
Was an
well
that
done.
Was a guess as well.
What
no
was
idea.
It? That's the thing. The Itchy and Scratchy. I was, yeah.
It kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Because the mouse causes trouble for the cat.
Or well, like, I just like, guess like the cat scratches.
Like Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
Itchy
well, it's
and scratches.
Not that, yeah, Itchy, yeah. Mm. Yeah. The cat is the one that's infuriated by the mouse, so he's the one who's...
Scratching versus itching. Versus itchy. Yeah.
Well, now
he's being
exactly.
itchy and he's... They're both... yeah. Anyway, itchy's the mouse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Good quiz.
Doesn't have to make sense.
Good quiz.
Good quiz. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you. Thank you. Bonus question.
Feels better after last week's humiliating loss.
It wasn't humiliating.
Would you like to hear the bonus question?
Yes, please.
Yes,
bonus
please.
Bonus question. Okay. This is closest wins because, I mean, you might know it, you might not. How hot is the sun?
Oh, wow. Okay.
A song and a dance, we gave everyone a chance.
Yeah, we gave everyone a chance.
That would be 4 million degrees.
4 million degrees, eh?
Celsius.
Okay.
Do I guess? Are we doing closest wins?
Yes.
Okay.
It's roughly, by the way. And we're talking about the surface of the sun as well.
3 million degrees.
3 million degrees Celsius.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you go for, Alex?
I went for 4 million degrees.
4 million degrees? Okay.
That sounds like a million.
It's going to be like, like 500 degrees.
I mean, I kind of feel bad because I later said surface of the sun.
Yeah, I was going for like the core.
Oh yeah, totally.
What's the core temperature?
Yeah, core.
Okay, because there's quite a disparity. Okay, so Alex, if we're going for the core temperature, it's 15 million degrees Celsius.
Oh wow.
Okay.
If we're going for the surface, it's roughly 6,000.
Take the average, and what do you get?
I think you still win actually with the average there, Alex.
In fairness, though, like I'm happy with that. That's fine. I was just, it's one of those things where you never really know. If you don't know anything about it, then you don't even know whether it's in the thousands, the hundreds.
That's the thing.
So I'm glad at least one element of the sun was in the millions.
That's the thing. Would you ever guess that there'd be that much disparity between the surface and the core?
You say it to be
significant, but maybe not
That's really surprising that the surface is only in the thousands, actually.
Yes. Yeah, that surprised me as well. I thought it'd be hotter.
Yeah, I guess. But then I have no real good comprehension of temperatures, so...
Once it gets past 100, you'll burn, aren't you?
Once I get past 19 degrees, I just lose it. So, you know, 6,000, 24 degrees, doesn't make a difference to me either way.
180 degrees cooks like a chicken breast in about 20, 25, 30 minutes. So how long would it take to cook a chicken breast on the surface of the sun?
That's a good question.
But would it be thoroughly cooked, and would you get salmonella if you ate it?
It'd still be raw in the middle, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Like a barbecue.
Alex, the outside's black. Fine, we'll eat it. Oh no, it's still raw inside.
I mean, that's one of the reasons
you're a vegetarian.
And it's
full of radiation.
they're all full of radiation. Don't worry about that.
Oh, okay.
Good quiz.
Well,
good quiz. And well done, Alex. That was a good victory. Straight in there
thank
with the knowledge.
Thank you. Congratulations, Martin, I think. I don't know if... I'm not 100% sure if we're being premature with that congratulations.
No, he's got it. I think he's got it in the bag. Yeah. Martin is the Season 2 king.
Hooray!
I'll get that one day. Yeah. Season 3,
but
presumably.
Join us again next week where me and Robin will be in a death grip battle for second place. The tensions are higher than they've ever been, clearly. I don't know about you, Robin, but I'm dropping everything I have on this week just to practice general knowledge quizzes. Yeah.
Spend the whole week boning up. Open wide, I'm coming in. That's...
Wow.
I don't know. Okay. What?
Do you hear what you're saying?
Sometimes. Other times, not so much.
Yeah. I was going to wrap up, but I feel like you hosted the quiz, Martin, so you should.
Yeah, you deserve it.
You
deserve this.
Maybe we could do one line each.
Okay,
you say something, I say something.
It's already gone wrong. It's a disaster.
It's already gone wrong.
Well, no, why don't we do one word each?
Okay.
So you start.
Thank.
You.
Very.
For.
Joining.
Robin, you're not involved in
fine.
This.
Fine. For a moment, I thought it was included. But, you know, I know my place now. I'm going away.
This was an interesting thought experiment, but...
I thought we were doing quite well until then.
You were doing very well. I think you should start again.
Okay.
Thank.
You.
For.
Joining.
Us.
On.
The.
Podcast.
Today.
Hey.
If.
You.
Want.
to
see
more
of
the...
Wasn't going for the, but... the
roll with it, improv, the, improv.
The podcast.
Then
head.
No, no. Let's stop this now. This is
okay. It was good enough. We'll see you next time. Thank you so much. If you want to see more of us, head on over to the Patreon for a little more interesting. And check out NordVPN for that offer as well. 68% off using the code justinteresting at checkout, or nordvpn.com/justinteresting. 4 months free for the Black Friday deal and an extra month money back guarantee.
Well done.
Thanks, guys.
Castration.
Bye.